Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. To find out more about our upcoming shows or access to our more than 1,500 podcast episodes, visit our website at www.bikeradio.me. Today, my special guest is Mark Reinisch, author of The Wellness Ethic, How to Thrive in an Unpredictable World Where Stupid Things Can Happen. The Wellness Ethic is a self-help book for people who hate self-help books. It's fast-paced, packed with humor, and refreshingly relatable. It delivers actionable insights that can make thriving simple and achievable. Whether you're navigating personal challenges, looking for more fulfillment in an unpredictable world, or just want a fun, insightful read that makes you laugh while shifting your perspective, The Wellness Ethic was written for you. It'll help you live a happier, more intentional life. Mark Reinisch is an author, life coach, and entrepreneur specializing in personal transformation. He has decades of executive experience in corporate America, having driven transformation programs to help people and companies realize their vast potential. As side hustles, he founded a social media startup, shepherded it to a successful buyout, and has written a dozen comedic screenplays. His dry wit comes along for the ride in all that he does. For more information, visit the website www.wellnessethic.com. And with that, I'd like to welcome Mark to the show. Good day, sir.
Good afternoon. Thank you.
It is my pleasure. And I usually like to start the show with inspiration, since it's the name of the show. And I'd like to find out what inspires an author to write their book, you know, to get to that point from just talking about writing the book to actually doing it. So what inspired you to write The Wellness Ethic?
Well, it started around 6 years ago, and I took stock of my life, and I had a lot to be grateful for, you know, a wonderful marriage, two amazing children, a positive career. And I had, as you mentioned in the introduction, had launched a social media startup as a side hustle and sold it, and a lot of other activities. I had all the reason to be happy and fulfilled, but something was lacking. So whenever I'd feel happy, it was fleeting. And I knew I had to work on my mindset. I had to figure out how to thrive in life. So I thought, you know, if I could write a book about wellness and break it down to its essence and be able to make it accessible and actionable and apply all the lessons learned to my own life to learn how to thrive, I knew I could help others do the same. So that epiphany to write the book really was the inspiration just to make my life better and get the most out of my existence. But then the secondary benefit was I knew I would leave a legacy for my children. So long after I was gone, they would have a book that they could tap into to access the wisdom and experience that I'd accumulated throughout my life. And that thrilled me. It just gave me peace of mind about the future. So the way I looked at it, it was all upside to write The Wellness Ethic.
Yeah, kind of like that advice from your dad that you want to get when he's around, but if he's not around, you still want to have that advice.
Exactly.
So how would you describe what The Wellness Ethic is?
So I definitely work hard, but the problem is work ethic has been, I believe, hijacked by business, where it becomes a badge of honor to work yourself into the ground, work throughout the weekends. Heck, even some companies put in cots into conference rooms to encourage employees to sleep at the office just to get more work. It sounds crazy, but that's the culture and that a lot of people get caught up in. But what I propose is to have a wellness ethic. So the it's really only noble to work hard if you're working hard for your well-being. So a wellness ethic means you're devoted to wellness because you know that's the key to thriving in life. So you're going to focus on your mind, body, and spirit. You're going to build that foundation that's going to give you a lot of positive energy throughout your life. But then you also focus on your relationships to build healthy and loving relationships. But the wellness ethic is also about your personal passions, the hobbies, the interests that you pursue. And it's also about your profession. Do you find meaning and joy in your work? Now, it's never going to be perfect. You're going to have ups and downs, as I write in the subtitle of my book. Stupid things are going to happen because that's the ways of the universe. But when you have a wellness ethic, you're resilient. You bounce back. You choose your response to whatever comes your way. And it's a positive, life-affirming response. So if you keep on chipping away and focus on your well-being, you'll find that you'll thrive. And as I state it in the book, you'll nurture the wonderful gifts of your existence. So that really is the essence of the wellness ethic.
Yeah. Now, and you mentioned, you know, how stupid things happen. Also, you know, in today's world, change is always constant. I mean, it always has been, it always will be. But the pace of change sometimes differs. And it seems that, you know, the pace of change nowadays is quite quick. And for some people, coping with that change, that rapid change, can be difficult. So with a focus on the wellness ethic, that will help those cope with change?
Oh, without a doubt. And I start off the book, the first quarter of the book, on techniques on how to adopt change in your life. So to give you an example, when I, probably 3 years ago, I was halfway through writing the wellness ethic. I was applying the principles to my life, and it was having a profound impact on just my peace of mind and overall happiness and fulfillment. And then I was thrown a curveball. A stupid thing happened. I was laid off from my job, and I did not expect it at all. And usually you have a sense for how things are shaping up. This one caught me completely by surprise. But literally, within 5 minutes, I had a new direction in my life. Because once I got off the phone and was notified that I didn't have a job, I walked into my bedroom where my wife was getting ready for the morning. And I told her. She was shocked because, you know, a few months ago prior, she was at my manager's house celebrating the holidays. So again, this was a curveball we didn't expect. But she immediately said, you know, Mark, now you can focus full time on writing your book. And I thought, wow, that would be a dream. And 5 minutes later, after she said that, I had quickly crunched the numbers and thought, I can take a 2-year sabbatical from corporate America and focus full time on finishing my book, living my dream, and taking it as far as I can take it. And even if it didn't work out, I would have the gift of those 2 years. I'd have the legacy of writing that book. And I would always have that memory and that satisfaction knowing I really went for it. I rolled the dice and went full blown after my dream. And because I had the wellness ethic and infused those principles into my life, I had that peace of mind when something traumatic happened to me and I chose my response on how I was going to move forward. It was wonderful.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, that is a wonderful tool for the toolbox to be able to do that. And I noticed in your book you talked about reaction versus response to situations happening. And I just noticed you said how you responded to that. So there's a difference between the two, isn't there?
Oh, without a doubt. And if you're not intentional with how you live your life and respond to situations, if you don't have that peaceful disposition within your life and the tools that you can at your disposal for when things happen, if something adverse happens, you may react to it. You may be emotionally charged. You may not accept what has happened. You could frame it in a very negative light, and then you just react and at times lash out at life. Or when something adverse happens, you can follow a model that I wrote about in the early part of the book, what I call the accept, frame, respond model. So the first step is to accept your reality. So when I was laid off, I wish it didn't happen, but I accepted that's my reality. Mm-hmm. And so now what do I do with it? Well, let me frame it in the most positive way I can. I could frame it in a very negative way and, you know, well, why would they have laid me off? There's something wrong with the company, something wrong with the manager. No, it happened. It's life. I can frame it in a positive way that this is actually a gift, and that may sound bizarre, but it was a gift for me to commit all in on my dream, because I probably wouldn't have left corporate America had I not been laid off. So once I framed it as a wonderful opportunity, I then didn't react to what happened. I chose my response on my terms, on based on what I could control, on how best to move my life forward. And that is a very powerful, simple, but very powerful approach to accept something, frame it in a positive, life-affirming way, and then choose your response on how you want to move your life forward.
Yeah, that's a wonderful way to shift from a reactionary kind of mode, which is normally what people will do when something dramatic like that happens.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, I mentioned in the introduction that your book is different from other self-help books. So, coming from the author, how is it different?
Well, I've read a ton of self-help books, and many of them I would always get some good takeaways, and some self-help books, and I mentioned them in my book, are terrific, teaching lessons and showing you how to apply it. And the writing is somewhat engaging because the way I look at it, improving your life should be fun, can be challenging, but you should have fun with it. And reading about improving your life should be fun as well. And that may seem like a crazy notion, but that's what I've accomplished with the book. And I've gotten some tremendous feedback around that some people have said it's actually a page turner. So how I accomplished that is, first of all, I set out to make wellness accessible and actionable, to truly break down wellness to its essence. So I use what they call the Pareto principle, the 80-20 rule. And what that means is 80% of the results come from 20% of the actions. So for instance, 80% of the benefits of spirituality can be attained by practicing just a few essential tenets, the 20% of the most vital spiritual practices. So if you take a concept like spirituality, that can be very intimidating to people. Like, where do you start? There are libraries of books on spirituality. So what I did in that example is I broke it down to the vital few concepts that are going to give the most benefit to the average person. So with spirituality, for instance, I broke it down into three core concepts, and I show you how to apply each one. So the first concept would be embrace your life purpose. What do you do to impact the world that's going to bring you deep fulfillment? Secondly, the second concept is love the universe of existence. So how can you feel and share more love in your life? And I make that simple and very accessible and actionable. And then the third is imagine if your life was aligned to your life purpose, and you're bringing love into your life, you're sharing love, so you seem like you're thriving. But then something stupid happens and it messes up your equilibrium. That's where the third concept comes in, and that's surrender to the ways of the universe. So that's accepting that change, as you said, is constant, but you always control your mindset towards that change and what response you choose to that change. So the first way that I make the wellness ethic different than other self-help books is I truly make wellness accessible and very actionable and very practical so you can move forward. But the second way is I infused a lot of storytelling and humor into the book. Literally every page, every other page, you're probably going to be chuckling or smiling in amusement. And it may be something stupid I did in my life, or, you know, with the storytelling, I'll share examples from my life to give you an idea of what good and not so good look like. So it makes the concepts really spring to life. So that's how the wellness ethic is very different than any other self-help book out there.
Yeah. And in the introduction to your book, you indicated that you were going to be showing vulnerability throughout the book. And so did you have any hesitancy or what would you, I mean, because I know a lot of people when they want to like do a memoir or do something where, you know, they want to write a book, but they don't want it to be about themselves, you know, that they don't want that vulnerability to be a part of the topic of discussion. So tell us kind of why you included that aspect in your book.
Certainly. What I found with any nonfiction book, whether it's self-help or heck, even a science book, when the author tells a story, even if it's a short story, a couple paragraphs, it's usually the most engaging material in the book. So I knew I wanted to share a lot of stories, but initially I thought, you know, I'll share a couple personal stories, but I'm also going to draw from history because I'm a history buff. So I was going to write stories about Alexander Hamilton and the founding fathers and relate them to wellness. And I had a plan to do that. And I started out doing that, but I found that those stories fell flat. But when I wrote from the heart and shared the good and challenging from my life, it really leaped off the page. So at times it can be hilarious, some of the stories that I'll share. Other times it can be heart-wrenching. So to give you an example of being vulnerable, I talked about my screenwriting career. For 20 years, I wrote screenplays, and I wrote around a dozen comedies. And every screenplay, I was convinced this is going to be the one to sell. I had no I doubt about it. I was a positive thinker. I would do daily affirmations about it. And then every time that it didn't sell, it would be crushing. And I would view myself as a failure. And that really negatively impacted my mindset and my life satisfaction, part of the reason why I wrote the wellness ethic. So I share that in the book. And by writing the wellness ethic and sharing that story, I then at the end of the story, I reframed that and I started to look at it differently and thought, you know something, it really was a gift to write screenplays and just the process of creative writing and just being in the arena and competing and chasing a dream. I'm happy and fulfilled with that. Success measure wasn't whether I sold a screenplay or not. That was truly out of my control. But did I go after my dream? But in being even more vulnerable, I looked back and I recognized that I was almost all in on that dream, but I wasn't fully in. I could have studied the top 100 screenplays ever written to uncover their secrets. I could have worked with screenwriting coaches more. I could have taken more classes. There's a lot I could have done to be all in on that dream. And in a game of inches to make it as a screenwriter, that probably would have made the difference. But then I learned from that experience. So in writing the wellness ethic, I was all in, not just when I was doing it part-time, but when I ended up taking that two-year sabbatical. I was confidently able to do that because I learned my lesson from 20 years of screenwriting. So I share stories like that to, again, show you what good and not so good look like. It's a real life.
That's wonderful. And I agree with you that when reading a nonfiction book, you know, the personal experiences of the author really get my attention, you know, rather than some, you know, reference to history or reference to, you know, anything other than that personal experience, because it's that personal experience that the reader will often relate to.
Right. And, you know, I'm not a billionaire. I'm not a CEO. I haven't lived this fabulous existence that you watch shows on TV. It's a real life with ups and downs, and I share it all and I make sense of it and build a roadmap and approach that the average person can adopt whatever resonates with them to move forward in their own life. And that's why the readers of my book, The Wellness Ethic, almost universally say it's a very relatable book. They can see themselves in that, and that helps them to apply the concepts to their own life.
That is so important, you know, especially when trying to help oneself, you know, to really venture on self-help. It's important to be able to be actionable and practical, you know, and so now your book is divided into, this is kind of like the anatomy of the book, it's divided into 12 sections, most with two chapters, a story chapter, and then followed by a wellness chapter. So I want you to kind of talk about that structure, as well as I noticed that it's kind of like a play. I mean, you know, it might be that screenwriting kind of coming through, but you have pre-production, acts 1 through 3, and closing credits, which I kind of chuckled at.
Yeah, the structure of the book, I wanted it to make sense. And I wanted the reader to be able to engage with the content on their own terms. So if you want to go sequential, it's ordered in such a way that you can go sequential because each chapter builds. But if you just want to helicopter in and read the chapter about relationships because maybe you're struggling with a relationship issue, you can go straight to that chapter and refresh, you know, the approaches on how to repair relationships or take good relationships and, you know, make them great and loving. So I purposely structure the book like that. But the way I also approached it, and you referenced it, is there's around 12 concepts. And the first part of the book I labeled as pre-production because I was paying homage to my screenwriting endeavors. And this is all the table setting to kind of position you to be able to then immerse yourself in the wellness concepts. So I'll introduce you to the wellness ethic model, and I'll have chapters on how you choose your response to life, because every day you're going to have choices about your well-being and also things that come your way. So having the skills to be able to effectively make the right decisions on your own terms is super important to be able to adopt the wellness concepts that I wrote about. But then I also dedicate a chapter on adopting change in your life. So again, you have the tools and the know-how to actually implement the ideas that you like in the book. You're not going to be left stranded at the end of the book wondering, all right, what do I do with this? So once we set that foundation of practices for you to be able to adopt change, then we set the stage. And now I get into the mind, body, and spirit foundation, because when you strengthen your mind and you're more of a positive thinker and you mindfully engage in, you know, life and you're living in the now, That's going to be very powerful. That's going to give you positive energy. When you tend to your body and you build an exercise habit and you're focusing on rest and your sleep and you're eating well, that's also going to give you positive energy. And when you are more spiritual and bringing more love into your life and surrendering to the things you can't control, again, that's going to give you more positive energy to fully engage in life. So once you strengthen that foundation, and that's going to be a lifelong journey, you're never going to be perfect on it. No one ever is, but you just keep chipping away at it, and you'll find a way to thrive. But then you get into the next section of the book. Now you have all this positive energy. So what are you going to do with it? Well, take a look at your relationships. Which ones are thriving? Which ones may be challenged? Are you involved in your community? Have you lost touch with friends? Are you struggling with a partner? I'm going to show you practical ways that you can improve relationships no matter what state they're in. Then we focus on personal and professional pursuits, how to get more satisfaction with the activities you engage in. And then we'll cover a topic I call lifestyle maintenance, enable your well-being. And then lifestyle maintenance will also include the chores and, you know, maintaining your house, mowing your yard and things like that. So that is the essence of the wellness ethic. And for each of those concepts, let's take the mind chapter. I'll start off with a chapter and I'll tell a personal story that will foreshadow the concepts you're going to learn about in the actual mind chapter that gets into the content of how to, you know, nurture a healthy mindset. So generally, that's the structure of the book. It's orderly, but it allows you to skip around or go sequential if that's your preference.
Yeah, and that's good. I think for many people, they will go through and read the book maybe front to back. For me, I'm the kind that likes to do it in that order, recognizing many times that, you know, authors will, in subsequent chapters, build on something in the previous chapter. But once I have read it, it's also good to know that I can go back for a quick reference. You know, like you said, you know, if it maybe it's relationships, having a book designed for that, you know, that future support is also extremely helpful.
Yeah, and people have told me it's the kind of book that you keep on your nightstand because, and not just put it up on your shelf because you're going to want to reference it.
Yeah, very much. So now you mentioned, you know, the mind, body, and spirit aspect. And so how does the wellness ethic impact physical wellness?
Yeah, when I looked at physical wellness, the body, I developed a model to simplify it. I call it the STEER model. That's an acronym. It's STEER, as if you're steering your body to good health. So it starts with science. That's the S. And the reason why I started with science is if you trust but verify the science around your health. So you get testing and you stay on top of how you're feeling. You're like inquisitive science. You're noticing changes in your body and you build that partnership with a primary care physician and trust but verify what they're recommending, whether it's taking vaccines or supplements or doing other preventative measures or treatments. If your body is breaking down or if you have an illness, that leads to the next step, and I call it treat in the STEER model, and that is taking action when something is wrong, not being in denial about it, choosing your response, and get the care that you need. But then we move on to eat, and that gets, and that's the E in STEER, and that gets into nutrition. Now, nutrition can be overwhelming, so I take the 80-20 approach. I don't get into the minutiae of every single concept out there. I just focus on the basics, and that's looking at the various nutrients, whether it's, you know, vitamins and minerals, focus on nutrient dense foods that have high nutritional content versus the calories that you consume. Choose healthy fats, plant-based protein as much as you can, and complex carbs, avoid sugars as much as possible, fiber, hydration, and so on. And for most people, if you are mindful about what you eat, focus on nutrient density, eat diverse foods, what they say, you know, eat a rainbow of plants every day, covering the major colors, that's going to give you diverse nutrition. And if you watch your calories, just don't overindulge. For most people, that's all you have to do around nutrition. You don't have to take supplements. You don't have to count calories and plan the perfect meal, unless there's a reason to do so. If you're overweight or you do have a nutritional deficiency, if you're expecting or if you're training as an athlete, there can always be very good reasons why you need to pull down on nutrition. But for most people, if you're sensible about your diet, you're going to be fine. And then the next step is exercise. And again, you can go to a gym for 3 hours a day, and you may have a reason to do that. You may love to work out. You may be trying to get peak performance. You may be an athlete or rehabbing. But for most people, if you just establish basic exercise habits, as part of the research for this book, I consulted with an owner of a gym, and he has every certification under the sun. He is an expert at what he does, very passionate. And he told me that, you know something, honestly, Mark, all you really need to do if you just want good results and you don't have any special needs is exercise 30 minutes a day for 5 days a week. And a moderate intensity exercise, so that could be brisk walking around the neighborhood. And he said, if you do that, that's going to give you 80% of the benefits you need. And so build a habit around that. Then stack a mobility exercise habit around that. And that can be 5 or 10 minutes of movement, different exercises, you know, 5 days a week. It doesn't have to be anything complicated. You can do it in the morning before you go for a walk, or if you're on a treadmill or whatever exercise you're doing. And then once you establish a habit around that, then add strength training. And that doesn't have to be lifting heavy weights or going to a gym. All I do is 3 times a week for 20 minutes a session, I lift barbells in my office. I have a basic routine, and that's all you really need to do. And the science tells you that's all you really need to do to get the basic benefits out of strength training. Then the last piece of the puzzle, the R in the STEER model, is rest. You can do everything perfect with your body, that like we have talked about, but if you don't get enough sleep, your body's going to break down. It's going to be detrimental to your mental health, your physical health, even your spiritual health. But you're never going to get a perfect night's sleep every single night. But you can do different things to chip away at getting better sleep. And I'll walk you through that in the book and give you a whole bunch of ideas that you can experiment with. So that is the 80-20, the essence of physical well-being, and it's all accessible and very actionable. Anyone can do it, and I'll show you how.
Oh, that's great. So I love acronyms. I was a corporate trainer, and there wasn't a program that we didn't create an acronym for. So the STEER was science, treat, eat, exercise, rest.
Yeah, and Robert, we could talk a lot about it. I had so much fun coming up with that acronym. It was probably a weekend of effort trying every imaginable combination. But once I hit upon STEER and steering your physical wellness in a healthy direction, it all came together.
That's perfect. You know, and it's easy to remember, you know, for those of us who, you know, want to enact a particular process. So, and I'm glad that you started with science, you know, and the idea of trust and verifying, because right now science is kind of getting a bad rap, in the sense that so many scientific facts are not being treated as such. So it's just real important, I think, you know, to be able to be open to and recognize what science can show.
Without a doubt. And what I would encourage the listeners to think about is science is not perfect. It's constantly evolving. New methods, new techniques, learn new insights. So it does evolve. But doctors and scientists aren't conspiring to deceive the public. They genuinely want to help people live better lives. And they have a ton of training to build that expertise to be able to do that. But verify. So go on Google, go with different resources, because the more knowledgeable you are, the more you're going to be able to ask questions. And at times, you're going to even be able to help the doctor diagnose, you know, what's going on. And I write about that in a story that I wrote about my youngest daughter, who had, if you can imagine this, a daily chronic headache at the level of a 4 to 6 out of 10 every single minute of every single day for 2.5 years.
Oh,
and she had debilitating migraines 5 to 7 times a week on top of that, which would jack up the pain level to 8 to 10. And this was while she was in high school. She had to be homeschooled, and this was before the pandemic. So it was a paradigm shift for us, the homeschooler, and she's an extraordinarily high-achieving student in person. And I went to the first couple doctors, you know, with our family, and one doctor questioned the pain level that she was experiencing. And that, to be honest, it infuriated me. Yeah, and then another doctor said, you know, Mark, you're probably never going to get underneath the root cause of this. So he said, what we do is we prescribe pain medication and just help her manage the pain. And the life just, you know, was drained from me when he said that. And I was upset about that as well. We naturally went to another doctor. But through that 2.5 year journey, we were learning more and more. And each doctor seemed to be getting closer until we found this wonderful doctor, Dr. Hart, who went through the scientific method to try to get underneath and experiment with different approaches, and ended up diagnosing her as having Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, which is a genetic connective tissue disorder that, you know, can be very, very serious, and it's going to be a lifelong affliction that she has. But through that process, he was also able to discover a muscle relaxant called Flexerol that shockingly controlled her daily chronic headaches. And then Botox ended up controlling her migraines. So after 2.5 years of her being a human guinea pig, she was able to get to the point where, and I knock on wood, for the most part, she is pain-free. She's living her life. She graduated from college. She's walked the Pacific Crest Trail, all 2,600 miles on the West Coast. I mean, she's a very active person. And if we didn't trust but verify the science and work with the experts, her life would be radically different today. Science is central to taking care of your body.
Yeah, well, and I can't help but kind of give a little chuckle, the idea of Dr. Hart getting to the heart of the matter there.
I never made that connection, but absolutely, yes.
Yeah, that is something. So now we're getting close to the end of the show. Throughout your book, you have an acronym, capital S-A-G, and then small e, SAGE. So can you tell us a little bit about what that stands for, what that indicates?
Sure. The concept of self-actualization goes back to Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Back in the, I believe it was the 40s, he wrote about that. You may have studied it in school. And it means that you have basic needs like food, water, shelter, and then you, once those are taken care of, then you can focus on, safety, love and belonging. And then you ultimately get to a state of self-actualization. And that is something wonderful to aspire to. It means you're thriving in life. You're realizing your full potential. So what I did when I was writing the book, I came up with that concept of a self-actualized genius. And that's an acronym, SAGE. So self is the S, actualize is the A, and genius, G and small e, completes the word SAGE. And I define SAGE as a person who has an exceptional ability to realize wellness to the extent they can influence by bringing their best self forward. So you're choosing the responses to life's ups and downs that move you forward. But it also is a person's internal guiding force that encourages them to prioritize wellness in their life. So I'll refer to it throughout the book. And I'm encouraging the reader, when they're navigating life, to think, what would my SAGE do? My best self, my self-actualized genius, when I'm operating at my finest, how would I want to respond to this situation? And then I further break it down that when a SAGE steers your life, you know your life purpose, you align your life to that, you tend to your mental, physical, spiritual well-being, you nurture loving relationships and other attributes. But I'll close it by saying you also accept the perfection of your imperfect existence. And that was one of the breakthrough ideas that helped me to get my arms around my own life and accept that as a screenwriter, I didn't sell a screenplay, but wow, being in the arena for 20 years, writing 12 screenplays that I loved, what a gift to do that. With my social media application, yeah, I didn't topple Facebook. They were a little bit resistant to me putting them out of business, but for 4 years as a side hustle, bootstrapping it with a co-founder, we were able to build a fully functioning social media site, got a patent with one of the design ideas. It was very different than anything that was out there. And we ended up selling it, didn't become rich off it, but a nice little outcome at the end. What a gift. So you could view it as it was imperfect. You didn't topple Facebook, or you can say, how perfect it was that I was competing and just trying to get the most out of my life. So it's a mindset shift that can be very empowering.
Yeah, the idea of perfectly imperfect, for those of us who recognize our imperfections, it's a great way to recognize that it's perfect the way we are.
Exactly.
Exactly. So what would be the one takeaway that you would want your readers to have after reading the wellness ethic?
Concept, it would be that the meaning of your life is to feel and share love. And if you put everything you do through the lens of love, trying to bring more of it into your life and in all your interactions with others, sharing your love and trying to lift up their lives. It's never going to be perfect, but if you focus on that, your life starts to come together.
So would you say that that's the meaning of life?
I would say that's the meaning of life, to feel and share love. That's what life is about, based on what you can control.
Wonderful. So I did notice on your website that you have a place for a Sunday SAGE newsletter. And can you tell us a little bit about that and how people can sign up for that?
Absolutely. I came up with the idea of the Sunday SAGE newsletter because I thought once someone reads the book, or if they just want to get more exposure to the wellness ethic concepts and maybe dabble in it to learn more, what I did was I took the 52 most powerful concepts in the book that covers mind, body, spirit, every element of the wellness ethic. I took the 52 most powerful concepts, and each week I'll send out one of those 52 concepts. I'll have a short excerpt from the book that talks about the concept. Then I'll have a section called What It Means, and I'll break it down in layperson's terms what this really means to the average person like myself and others. And then the next section will be simply how to move forward. And it will be motivational, inspiring, and asking you during the following week to put it into action. It could be one small action or it could be something big, but just try it out. And then the next week we'll have another topic. So throughout the year, this can serve as a way to keep the wellness ethic front and center in your mind and just keep on chipping away at your well-being, trying new things, and then adopting the things that work. So if you go to my website, right on the homepage, you can just simply enter your email address, and then I'll start sending you out the Wellness Ethic newsletter each week. And you also have access to some bonus materials. And I don't sell anyone's email address. There's no spam. You're just going to get the Sunday Sage newsletter.
That's great. And I also noticed on your Facebook that, I mean, on your webpage, that there are social media links that people can click on to follow you. The Untoppled Facebook, Twitter, or X, excuse me, and LinkedIn and Instagram. So listeners, if you want to follow Mark, go ahead and click on those social media icons. Well, Mark, this has really been a treat. I really want to thank you for your time and your insight.
Well, thank you very much, Robert. I truly enjoyed our conversation.
Great. Thank you. Again, everyone, today my special guest has been Mark Reinisch. We've been talking about his new book, The Wellness Ethic, How to Thrive in an Unpredictable World Where Stupid Things Can Happen. And again, you can find out more by visiting his website, www.wellnessethic.com. And everyone, in closing, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.